Everyone likes data because when you have more data, you have more freedom. Freedom to do whatever. That's why AT&T is offering you 15 gigabytes for $100 plus $15 for each line. Because the more data you have, the more freedom you can enjoy. Freedom to post more memories, download more fun, and share what matters most with who matters most. 15 gigs of data for $100 plus $15 for each line at AT&T. What more could you want? I sure can't think of anything. AT&T, mobilizing your world.
Come in now and get the all-new LG V10, designed to capture, edit, and share high-quality video.
Pricing is monthly for service on smartphones on AT&T Next. Other pricing options available, overage monthly, and other charges and restrictions apply. See a store for details.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Total Spotlight Show. I'm the host of the show, Neil Haley. You can go to my website, TotalTutor.net, for more information. Twitter, TotalTutor, Neil S. Haley, Facebook, LinkedIn, Neil Haley, Instagram, TotalTutor, Pinterest, Neil Hengu, plus and also on Periscope, at TotalTutor. And I'm excited to welcome the program author Rob Roselli. Rob, how are you? And I want to know what direction. We went through the Georgia Guidestones, and you talked about specifically a lot of the history and the understanding about everything. What direction do we want to go on tonight? I know you have so many different topics we can cover.
Well, you know, how you doing? Things interact so much, it's difficult to separate this stuff anymore. But I would say, I mean, what I've been kind of sending out on Twitter this week is the impending, maybe not impending, maybe already started, World War III, that I'm saying is pre-planned and nothing, I think with Winston Churchill, it says nothing in politics happens by accident. So I think we can kind of cover something, what I call the occult conspiracy that's available on my website and kind of go through that and talk about those sorts of things, because that seems to be what is unfolding right now. You know, today being Monday, I would say January 11th, 2016, that's kind of what I think it's very important. I mean, everything's important, but that right now seems to be the most important thing, and it ties in with things you've been talking about the last several weeks.
Right, exactly. And so in the last several weeks, we've been going into this, and you're right, there's so many different things happening. And anything from last week's news that has surprised you in any way, I mean, we're really getting in the heart. Remember I told you when the new year comes and the first week comes about, a lot of things that have been, I guess, held out. What about the whole fact of the matter about executive order with President Barack Obama with guns and stuff? I didn't get that take from you at all.
Well, you know, look, it all ties together. I mean, it's that this Obama, this multi-name scam in the White House, and, you know, again, maybe that's another show we can do in the future, to the image of the beast and this guy's background or lack thereof and who he really is. And there's way too many coincidences involved with this guy. But just like any good dictator, you need to seize all the guns before you really want to take control and put the hammer down, so to speak, on the people. And this is the drive to get rid of guns. And when you can't, this guy can't be serious as far as wanting to remove guns from law-abiding American citizens. I mean, this is the most lawless administration, the most lawless president in U.S. history. You got the whole Fast and Furious scandal where they were running guns illegally to Mexico. You know, he uses drones without remorse and without limit overseas. Remember in 2013, him and his Ivy League psychopath and friends, Kerry and other jack-off there, John McCain, the John brothers, a couple of weirdos and psychopaths and warmongers wanted to start World War III with Syrian President Assad over supposedly human rights violations, which turned out to be total falsities. So what I'm getting at with this guy is that for him to get on national TV and feign some kind of alligator tears and saying, you know, he's worried about children and gun violence, and saying we need to seize the guns from law-abiding American citizens, which is not an issue at all. And that is gun ownership by law-abiding citizens is really, there's no words for it. It's indescribable. But again, it's all about gun control and people control and that sort of thing, and that nothing to do with any kind of public safety or concern about violence or anything like that. I mean, it's just, again, the only reason he tries it or even he kind of gets away with stuff like that is because the American education system has been so inundated and so dumbed down, and that there's enough dummies in this country, fools, in the biblical word, to buy this guy's lines of crap and whatever he's selling, whatever snake oil he's selling on that particular day to... for him to be taken seriously. And of course we have the whore, disgraceful, just really no dignity media in this country that kowtows to this multi-name scam that's really another just absolute disgrace. And what is this modern day Roman Empire, this formerly great country known as the United States? That's my take on it. And World War III started by the guy that wants gun control.
The argument I make about this, Rob, is this. We're talking about background checks. When every one of these tragedies have been because of mental illness, every one of them has been a law-abiding gun owner that someone else took their ability or they passed certain things. There's only been a few that maybe background checks could have been done. But we all know that there's no way we could have stopped Connecticut's tragedy. And to talk about that background checks would have stopped San Bernardino is definitely not true. So there are only a few and far between that this is going to be the end all. Because if you're a criminal, are you going to be able to get guns, Rob? Bottom line, are you going to follow the law?
I don't want to get too bogged down in this. Of course not. I mean, it's simple common sense. I mean, it's just nonsense. I mean, under Obama, the mad bomber of foreign countries and drone killer and this freak. In the White House, this genocidal freak, demand any of this stuff. While his federal government has ordered north of 1 billion with a B rounds of ammunition for domestic use, what are they getting ready for? It's just, again, it's a joke, okay? It's a scam. Of course, the federal government's, under this guy is preparing to put the hammer down in the Mao. Stalin kind of sense, and this is the real reason for gun control. And if people want to listen, get more on that, I mean, they can go listen to, go listen to Limbaugh or Hannity on Fox News, and they'll get all the easy stuff and that sort of thing. But those guys are never going to get into the quote conspiracy. But again, and speaking of World War III, maybe let's get to the heart of the story and save that stuff for Fox News and the other, the other neocons and the other maniacs. The guys that still take Republican versus Democrat seriously. But again, my website is boxofsunglasses.com. That's one word, and I think we'll get back to the subject of the impending or already started World War III. And for a primer, on the quote conspiracy and the occult conspiracy, what we're going to talk about tonight, and another advocate of gun control, one Adolf Hitler, by the way, my book, The Un-American Genocidal Complex, is available. It's available on Amazon. There's a link, again, boxofsunglasses.com. and for purposes of tonight's show, we'll talk the occult conspiracy and then the three world wars that have been planned really for ages. Okay, and this concept of order out of chaos, and I'm not sure how far we'll get because, as usual, when we start talking about these things all interconnect, like gun control and Mao and Stalin,
exactly.
And Hitler and mm-hmm. now Obama and this sort of thing. Which is just a review. I mean, the last several shows, you know, way back when we talked about Mystery Babylon, how there is no doubt that the United States is, in fact, a mystery Babylon of Revelation 17 and 18. And then we talked about the anti-Ten Commandments of the Georgia Guidestones for several shows. And eventually, and I'm working on it, I promise, I'm going to get all these shows posted on my site on page 17 of my website, boxofsunglasses.com, and they'll be dated and general subject matter listed so people can, you know, go back and listen to the archived shows. But anyway, after the Mystery Babylon USA. We talked about the anti-Ten Commandments or the Georgia Guidestones. And the gentleman operating under the euphemism
right.
of
exactly.
Euphemism of R.C. Christian or Robert Christian, okay, which is the 18th degree of Freemasonry, which ties directly to the 6 plus 6 plus 6 or the 18th degree. You know, it says to count or calculate the number of the beast, and it says the number is in the forehead or in the right hand is the mark of the beast. And, you know, if people were, you know, listening on Twitter, and hopefully there's, you know, my Twitter numbers have been going up, steadily throughout the weeks, and I crossed the 5,000 milestone, and hopefully some of those people are listening or will be listening, but they've been, you know, been talking about this, you know, what I call the comic book Antichrist and all this other nonsense and all these other prophets, you know, prophets with an F of God talking about all this stuff. And many of these so-called prophecy experts, everybody's worried about these ridiculous Shemitah moons and all this other stuff. And I really don't think... that's where you need to be looking. I mean, you know, it's pretty much in our face, and a lot of these meanings are there. Okay, a lot of this stuff, if you look in the right places, a lot of the information is there, you know, and in this context, you know, remember way back when I made the analogy, and I have a couple different analogies. I mean, these so-called experts that want to sit here and tell us, you know, talk about a great tribulation and a rapture and a, you know, a microchip and all this other stupidity, they really don't have a clue for the most part. And I read all these guys, and again, I know some of them. They're well-learned people, okay, WorldNet Daily, and like, again, I've met a lot of these people, or I've spoken to them on the phone or both, and
right.
You know, they're very educated in what they do know. But as far as biblical knowledge and biblical theology, it's just terrible. Okay, you know, it's, you know, and really what I compare it to is if you're trying to go from New York to San Francisco, I mean, really, it's simple. You get on Route 80 and you drive across the country. A lot of these guys have gotten off on an exit in Ohio or Indiana or something, and they're just driving around the countryside blind as a bat. They don't know what they're talking about. Because they focus on the national Israel, or physical Israel, as being the centerpiece of biblical prophecy, and that's just wrong. Okay, I mean, I just, you know, again, that's a tangent. I want to kind of stay focused on the occult conspiracy as promised, but you know, that's the reason, you know, why so many people, so many evangelicals, so called in this country, support the national Israel, because they listen to these guys and they think, oh, you know, we have to defend Israel and this Israel, because Israel is God's chosen people. So no, they're not. I mean, a simple reading of the Old Testament, okay, they were God's chosen people at one time, but, you know, simple reading of the Testament, you know, I could sit here and name any number of chapters. You know, I would say just, you know, try reading Ezekiel 23, which reads like a soft porno novel, you know,
right,
describing
right.
how bad a whore, in a figurative sense, that, you know, both kingdoms are both separate kingdoms. Israel, remember in the Old Testament, Israel split into Israel and Judah, the 10 northern tribes for Israel, the 2 southern tribes of Judah, but they're compared to sisters that are just whores. In Ezekiel 23, and if you read it, again, it reads like a soft porn kind of thing. It's really the way it's described, and, you know, and then you go into Deuteronomy 7 and 8 and 27 and 28, just about the entire book of Isaiah, Jeremiah talks about, you know, how Israel broke the covenant and, you know, and the whoredoms and the worship of Baal and Asherah, okay, which again, remember we discussed this, the anti-Ten Commandments
right.
of the Georgia Guidestones ties into the rose and the cross, the rose being symbolic of Osiris, or the male god, or the hidden portion of the equation, or the male side, okay, the sun side of Freemasonry, and then the cross, you know, the female, the four kingdoms of nature, as symbolized by Isis or Gaia, okay, which ties into the modern environmental movement's concept of Gaia, the Gaia hypothesis, and this sort of thing, and the nature worship and the genocidal maniacs of today's environmental movement. On the cross side of the equation, so you got the RC or the Robert Christian, the Rosicrucians, okay, again, the rose plus the cross, or 18, okay, there's a number 18, 6 plus 6 plus 6, the number of the beast, okay, these two combine to give us, okay, the Son of God, you know, for example, in ancient Egypt, you know, the combination, you know, the Son of God or Pharaoh was regarded, you know, every Pharaoh in ancient Egypt was regarded as the Son of God or the offspring of the male and the female God and goddess. Okay, and this is really the occultism. So when God says, you know, for example, you know, in Jeremiah 7, and he's talking about Baal, Jeremiah, you read Jeremiah 7 through 9, for example, he's talking about the worship of Baal and Asherah and the Queen of Heaven. The Queen of Heaven mentioned in Jeremiah chapter 7, for example, or he's telling them, you know, go in and destroy the groves and the Asherah poles, and, you know, and the worshipers of Baal and this sort of thing. Remember, like I say, Deuteronomy 7, you know, he says, go into the promised land and kill everybody. You know, it sounds cold and cruel, and you know, that's a mean God. But this is what we're getting at, okay? This is the real story, okay? It's destruction of these sorts of people. These are people just completely given over to evil. And what I'm saying is that a simple reading, and a lot of the stuff is covered in the so-called mythologies of ancient Egypt. You know, we'll go back to ancient Sumer and Babylon, to ancient Egypt, which, again, is the focal point of many of the, you know, is the main adversary, not the only one, but the main adversary of the Old Testament is ancient Egypt. Okay, and it carries into Greece, Persia, to the Roman Empire, to today. Okay, they carry forward, so you can see the connection there. But again, this is the understream of really the entire Bible. Okay, so what I'm getting at, you know, again, is this is where the action is, so to speak. This is what you have to be focused on. If you're listening to these clowns and these jokers on, you know, on like the Trinity Broadcasting Network and these sorts of things,
right?
You're really missing a lot. Because then now you're sitting around. For example, if you're waiting, let me give a specific example here, and I promise I'll get back to the occult conspiracy and to what's really going on. But I read something like, you know, reading a book now called The Babylon Code, and, you know, the information in there is just, I mean, to me, it's almost comical. You know, you're talking about, for instance, the two witnesses, okay, you know, they're saying, you know, you read Revelation, and people that may be familiar with two witnesses, you know, Moses and Elijah are going to come back to life and, you know, start, you know, pointing their fingers, I guess, or a breathing fire, like a couple of, you know, like Godzilla, a couple of dragons running around, you know, frying people. And it was the, you know, the Revelation talks about the two witnesses, okay. And, you know, I think that's in Revelation 11, but it's so ridiculous concept is so ridiculous. I mean, it's so obvious that what God is talking about with the concept of the two witnesses that are going to be killed, you know, the beast will overcome them, is you go back to Matthew 17, and then the apostles specifically asked Jesus, say, you know,
right.
Why must Elijah, you know, why do the prophets say Elijah must come back? You know, and Jesus says to them, well, I tell you that Elijah has already come back, and they will do to me what they've done to Elijah. And then it says, well, then they came to the disciples. They recognized he was talking about John the Baptist. Okay. And if you go back a little further than that, to Matthew chapter 9, it says, you know, from the days of John the Baptist, you know, the kingdom of heaven has been taken over by violence. From the days of John the Baptist to now, so just in that instance, okay, you can see that obviously the two witnesses refer to the Old Testament prophets, okay, and it's meant to be taken figuratively, not literally, like, you know, like again, like a couple of comic book heroes running around zapping people with lightning bolts and flamethrowers, okay, so it's just things like that. You know, it just cracked me up in a sense. You know, you read this stuff. This is why I call a lot of the stuff, you know, the comic book Antichrist and, you know, and the prophets of God, because the stuff, when you read it, it reads like a comic book. Okay. You know, I hate to, you know,
exactly.
Funny is the right word, but it's almost funny to me to read this stuff and take these guys seriously. And these guys are, again, these guys, a lot of them are best-selling authors. They're selling millions of dollars of books and millions of books, and they're getting on the Trinity Broadcast Network and these other channels, and, you know, a few of them even get on to Fox News and this sort of thing, and it's just a joke. And another thing that cracks me up are these, you know, looking for signs in the sky and this sort of thing. And, you know, if you go back, say, to Matthew chapter 16, you know, on Jesus, you know, if we go back to 15, okay, and you had the Canaanite woman, okay, you know, so even the Canaanite people, okay, are recognizing Jesus, and not the so-called religious experts, the so-called, you know, the so-called chosen people, you know, God's chosen people,
right?
They missed the boat wholesale. Again, going back to Matthew 11, it should be more tolerable in Sodom and Gomorrah than it will be for you. And, you know, he's talking to God's so-called chosen people, you know, national Israel. I mean, you imbeciles, you so-called experts, are you kidding me with some of this stuff? But anyway, Jesus, you know, in Matthew 16 tells the Pharisees, you know, the same group with the money changers, the only group that, you know, that Jesus, you know, while he was alive on earth in human form, you know, the group he chased literally with whips and literally whipped out of the temple, okay, the money changers allied with the Pharisees, i.e. national Israel, okay, he tells them in Matthew 16, he says, you can recognize the signs in the skies, but you can't recognize the signs of the times. You know, no sign shall be given to you except that of the prophet Jonah, okay, which obviously he's referring to himself in his own death and the resurrection from the dead. You know, but basically he's telling them, you guys are a bunch of astrologers and stargazers. So what he's really referring to is this Jewish concept of the Kabbalah, okay, where they've taken the Bible and really had turned it on its head. And the Kabbalah, again, it's something else I discuss on the site. It's a concept I don't want to go into right now too deeply, but basically it is the backbone of occultism throughout history. It's the Kabbalah. It's the backbone of Freemasonry and its offshoots, like the things we're talking about, okay, like the Rosicrucians, okay, it's an offshoot of the concept of Freemasonry. Again, this male plus the female, light plus dark, sun plus the moon, you know, the mother god, goddess, and the father god of the Pharaoh, the son of God. Again, this stuff all ties together. But again, so what Jesus is referring to in Matthew 16, again, to tie us all together, is this, these Jews are, they're whoring themselves,
right,
in a figurative,
mm-hmm,
or in a religious sense with, they're acting, in other words, they're acting as, remember in Revelation 21, you know, it talks about the bride of Christ, you know, meeting Christ, going to heaven, and all this sort of thing. But what he's talking about and you know, in Matthew 16, is, you know, you guys, remember in Ezekiel 23, which you talked about a few minutes ago, that same concept, that when you guys are a bunch of religious or figurative whores, okay, and you're selling yourselves to the sun god or the male god or Baal, which is really Lucifer, you know, the father of lies, or the god, the false god of light. You know, remember, your eyes shall be opened. Okay, Genesis chapter 3. I mean, this stuff starts ringing a bell now. You all see an eye on the top of the Egyptian pyramid on the back of your Federal Reserve note.
Wow, yeah.
The male god, you know, illumination, Illuminati, your eyes shall be opened. You know, this stuff all ties together. So I guess what I'm getting at is, by way of some background, is, I guess, the overall message in this little diatribe in my last, you know, 20 minutes of rambling on here, is that if you're listening right now, and I'm not saying this to brag, and I'm not saying this how great I am, it's the last thing I want to say, but consider yourself very fortunate if your mind is being opened and if you're understanding things in a completely different manner than what these so-called experts are telling you. And I'm here to tell you that, you know, stop listening to these guys. I mean, I do read them, and once in a while you pick up snippets of information or something doesn't make sense, but in a very broad and general sense and overall, these guys don't know what the hell they're talking about, no pun intended, as far as what the Bible says and this sort of thing. And then maybe, so with that kind of foundation, let's get into the occult conspiracy, and I'll shut up now and let you talk.
Right, exactly. So the co-conspiracy. So you talked about, again, looking at who the co-conspirator is, who are the people we have to look out for that are leading this agenda, that the unholy Ten Commandments that the Georgia Guidestones have, that society is being built upon in the United States. Who are the co-conspirators, in your opinion?
Well, again, what I like to call the anti-Ten Commandments, that we talked about on the Georgia Guidestones, and they're covered, again, in my book, The Un-American Genocidal Complex, and that book is kind of the Cliff Notes version of my whole website and a lot of the conversations we have. It's a two-hour read, so if you read that and some of this stuff is not making sense, after you read that, it'll go a long way in helping you learn, and kind of see things the way they are. But anyway, as far as, you know, the modern day occult conspiracy, what I'm saying is, let's just go back to the 1800s. And really it started with with Darwin and the social Darwinists. Okay, and that gave rise, to, of course, is the eugenics movement, the American eugenics movement, and these genocidal Malthusian maniacs, these Malthusian freaks, okay, and the population control movement. Okay, remember, anti-Ten Commandment number one, maintain humanity under 500 million people, and again, that's a 6.5 billion with a B decrease in the population of the world. Okay, and how are they going to go about doing that? And the way, one of the most efficient ways, as we've been discussing, besides, disseminating the AIDS virus all over Africa and the American homosexual population, which, quote, they, here's that word, they, have done, parentheses, my favorite movie, John Carpenter's They Live, in my first book, They Live, Great Society, The Undead, also gives a lot of this background. But anyway, I'm going to say our purposes right now, the real Illuminati, or the self, the enlightened ones, okay, this group of elites that literally think that they are the recipients or they are somehow entitled to control of the world, because they've been deceived by Lucifer. Remember Matthew chapter 4, Luke chapter 4,
Satan
promises to Jesus, the kingdoms of the world, because he controls them. The people that have taken the deal, so to speak, what I call the Anglo, not what I call, but what people call the Anglo-American establishment, the Eastern establishment, what I call the un-American genocidal complex. That's the skull and bones crowd. It's tied in with the Illuminati, the Bavarian Illuminati. Remember, illumination, your eyes shall be opened.
Right, right.
Say the Rothschild family in Europe, okay?
Mm-hmm.
You know, they started back there in the 1700s. And then, you know, I think there were five sons, okay? You know, each one operating in the kingdoms or the capitals of Europe, rather. You know, you had London, France, Italy, Austria, and I can't remember the other capital. But anyway, they took over, you know, the five capitals of Europe. But the important Rothschild, I want to say, was Nathan, the most prominent, okay? And he took over in London, and if people are familiar, you know, what happened. The way they accrued, I mean, they were money changers. They were modern-day money changers, okay? They were into banking and usury, which is interest, okay? But the way they really accumulated their wealth in the modern sense, without going into too much detail on the Rothschild family specifically, but basically what they did is they kind of manipulated the English stock market based on the Battle of Waterloo. I mean, Rothschild, they got information that
right.
Napoleon had lost the Battle of Waterloo, but they, you know, they came in and said that, you know, basically the information they have that they spread, the rumor that they spread was Napoleon had won and he was coming to England next, and, you know, the English stock market basically freaked out, and they had a fire sale on stocks, and the Rothschild family was able to move in, buy things a penny on the dollar, and basically they became so powerful economically that they essentially took over England. Okay, so here's the Anglo part of the Anglo-American establishment, and there's a little bit more to it than that. I'm just kind of giving the overview to answer your question in the modern sense. And what they did from there is now they have all this wealth. What they did is they bankrolled the American or the Anglo-American, the American side of the equation. And that would be the, you know, the so-called robber barons that some of us, you know, when they still taught history in high school, you know, who the hell knows what the dumbed-down education system, what they're teaching these
right,
days.
Right.
You know, these were the so-called robber barons of the 1800s, okay? You had your Rockefeller family, J.P. Morgan were the two big ones, okay? And then, of course, you had some other players in there, Harriman Railroad Interest, Carnegie Steel, Vanderbilt's, Astor's, and these sorts of things. And this was the crowd, okay? This was the crowd that was behind the Federal Reserve System in the United States. Again, you know, this is covered at length in my site in my first book. And again, this is what today, these are the groups, you know, the American Skull and Bones, the Bilderberg Group that people may have heard of, the Council on Foreign Relations and these sorts of things, okay? You know, the Council on Foreign Relations is an interesting one, okay? You know, the Rothschilds, I mean, in the circles over in England, okay, you had something called the Royal Institute of International Affairs, okay? You know, this is the Council on Foreign Relations, you know, equivalent over in England in the 1800s. That gave rise to something called the Round Table Groups, okay, which got its name from, you know, talk about the occult and legends and how these guys really think and operate. It goes back to the legends of so-called King Arthur, which ties into the concept of, you know, the whole Knights Templar and that whole
right,
crowd going
right.
back, you know, almost 1,000 years. Anyway, they had the Round Table Groups, and from there that gave us you know, the American equivalents, things like the Council on Foreign Relations, Skull and Bones, and these sorts of things, again, being bankrolled by European Rothschild interest, okay? And then, you know, then in the early 1900s, these guys came over here and really started manipulating United States elections. And this is going to segue, actually, nicely into the conversation on the occult conspiracy, you know, we'll get there in a minute. But anyway, crowd, you know, Warburg, Jacob Schiff, Bernard Baruch, and these sorts of, you know, just slimy money changers. Okay, remember, we talked about the money changers a few minutes ago. These are the modern-day money changers, okay? They manipulated the political system here in the United States, and they brought up this mysterious Ivy League no-name Putz, Okay, and if this sounds familiar, well, wait a second, Ivy League, no name, came from nowhere, no qualifications, complete putz. That sounds like Barack Obama, but I'm not talking about, Barack Obama. I'm talking about Woodrow Wilson. Okay, perhaps the second biggest scumbag in presidential history behind this multi-name scam we have in the White House now. But anyway, these guys found Woodrow Wilson, the so-called progressive from Princeton University, and he was their man, okay? You know, Woodrow Wilson gave us, he was a double hitter. Oh, he was a triple hitter. I mean, he knocked it out of the park as far as the occult conspirators. Okay, he gave us the Federal Reserve System. Okay, our current debt-based scam. Okay, our perpetual debt scam. A Federal Reserve banking system, which is the economy we operate under right now. Which is why I consider these presidential election, including Donald Trump, I consider it a complete joke, okay? Because until somebody comes in and says we need to get rid of this perpetual debt mathematical scam, okay, this designed to fail Federal Reserve System, anything any of these guys says ultimately is a joke, okay? Which explains why I'm not really interested in talking about presidential too much. Because nobody's saying what needs to be said. I mean, Trump kind of,
you can find it anytime. You're pretty much trying to tell you, we're trying to find out the people that are really the co-conspirators, who to look for.
I've already named names. Okay, remember a couple minutes ago, Rothschild, and then these names are still around. I mean, they haven't gone anywhere. They've changed forms. But these names are still around, okay, again, it's Rothschild banking interest in Europe, okay, and it's, the robber barons, these families, and for the most part, they're still around, okay, there's some new names, there's some new people in the club, okay, today that would be the Bush family, the Skull and Bone member, family, the Skull and Bone member, John Kerry, and these sorts of things. But what I'm doing, what I'm attempting to do right now is just tie this thing into this, these planned world wars and the occult conspiracy, which I talk about on the site, and I'm trying to give a little bit of background. But basically, so you have, we're talking about Woodrow Wilson, okay? He gave us a Federal Reserve System, okay, which is the backbone to the military-industrial complex. Remember, people may remember, President Eisenhower in the 1900s, right before he was done as president. I think it was in 1959, 1960, something like that. He gave this speech about, warning us about the military-industrial complex. What he was really talking about is the group I'm calling the Un-American Genocidal Complex, the Federal Reserve crowd. Again, they're most, symbolically, and for the time period that we're going to springboard into, called the occult conspiracy and the three world wars. Okay, Woodrow Wilson gave us the Federal Reserve System. And what else did Woodrow Wilson give us? Okay, Woodrow Wilson, the putz, okay, the international banker Rothschild, J.P. Morgan, Rockefeller-backed putz, known as Woodrow Wilson, he screwed us with the Federal Reserve System. And what was the next thing that he did was he lied to get us into World War One. Okay, if you go back and read your history, that World War One is the first war of the three planned world wars, okay? So, we have World War II, and I just said at the beginning of the show, we're really at the beginning of World War III, so you can kind of see how this stuff ultimately is all connecting. And again, it has nothing to do with some stupid comic book antichrist, sitting there in Jerusalem, while Moses and Elijah run around zapping people with flamethrowers and lightning bolts. But anyway, so we have Woodrow Wilson in World War One, and if you go back and you read your history, and so-called experts and all that, again, it's just like with the more I read about the conspiracy, it's really quite simple. When you get through all the crap and all the media and all the academic whores and all the experts, and they get down to brass tacks, it really reads like a broken record. Okay, so you look at the history of World War One. There really was no good reason for it. Okay, you had Kaiser Wilhelm of Germany, you had Austria-Hungary, and like you may know this. I mean, I know you're a student of history, but everybody's sitting around scratching their heads. You know, what the hell, pun intended, was World War One really all about? Did it really have to go down like that? And as you'll see, as this conversation goes on, it did. If you're a complete evil, if you're a child of Satan, if you're a spawn of Satan, if you accepted the mark of the beast, in other words, okay, if you think like Satan and the anti-Ten Commandments of the Georgia Guidestones, and you have knighted yourself, Knights Templar, Knights of the Round Table, remember we talked about that a few minutes ago, in a figurative sense, and you think you are God, Genesis chapter 3, ye shall be as gods. The Pharaoh thought of himself as God. You know. Hopefully the picture is starting to kind of come into focus here. And really, you're seeing a panoramic of what I'm talking about and the undercurrent of what the Bible is talking about. You're the type of person, you know, what is the reason for World War One? There's no good reason for it on the, quote, normal level, but if you take a step back and you go on this conspiracy level, so-called conspiracy, then it makes a lot of sense, because you had countries being played against each other like pieces on a chessboard. Okay, so in other words, you had the Austrian-Hungary Prince Ferdinand, right, the Archduke, right, he's executed by the Serbian nationalists, okay, then that kind of was the spark that got the whole thing going, because then, you know, Germany jumps in to defend its friend Austria-Hungary, and then Russia jumps in, you know, on the side, you know, to help its Serbian allies, and then Russia's allied with Britain and France, and they jump into the war on, you know, against Germany and Austria-Hungary, and all of a sudden, boom, you got World War One. Okay, and it really, and we were not enemies with any country in Germany for the most part in World War One. And you go back to our founding fathers, as another aside, again, our great founding fathers, and this is another thing I have a problem with, a lot of these so-called conspiracy theorists calling our founders, you know, part of the Illuminati and part of the conspiracy. It's like, yeah, a few of these guys were Freemasons, but they weren't real serious Freemasons. Okay, and it's all that. Yeah, that's another whole thing.
That's the whole thing of the Masons. Well, yeah, let's jump to that for a second. So when you're talking about the Mason and then the Knights Templar and things like that, why do we have to be aware of the Masons? You talk about, again, the lack of belief of God of the Masons. The people are good people that join it based on thinking they're doing some good. But then you're talking to people that run the Masons. They're the kind of people that are looking to destroy our country and the world, right?
Well, let me say this, okay? You know, and then we'll go down that little, we'll come down a rabbit trail for a couple minutes, you know, to answer your question. You know, when I say Freemasonry, okay? On a level, on like the lower levels.
Right.
The Masons, you know, they have the Shriners, and they do a lot of good work. And, you know, look, I visited some Masonic lodges just out of curiosity. You know, a few years ago, I went to the George Washington, you know, Masonic Temple, and, you know, right there in Alexandria, Virginia. And for those people that's, you know, Freemasons, you know, they get on TV and say, you know, we don't have any connections. You know, we're just a group of, you know, come on, guys. You know, don't BS me. You know, you walk into George Washington's, you know, Masonic Temple in Alexandria, Virginia, and you go in there, and it's rife with ancient Egyptian symbolism, and, you know, several of the floors and all this sort of thing. So it's a joke.
Right.
What I'm getting at is that on a certain level, on the street level, we'll call it, on a lower level, I mean, you can, most many towns have Masonic halls, and I've walked in and I've talked to these guys, and you know what? You know, these guys are decent people, okay, they want to do the right thing, and a lot of them just joining, you know, it's just an excuse to get out and get out of the house and, you know, get together with the fellas and this sort of thing. And they, again, they do some good volunteer work, but when you go take it up a couple of levels and you go back into what the Freemasons really are, okay, it really, they themselves, if you read enough, and I'm talking Albert Pike, Manly Hall, Helena Blavatsky, okay, the so-called mother of the New Age, okay, the real the cult-oriented Freemasons. Okay, then they start explaining things. This little true origins of Freemasonry, and it really does trace back to the Garden of Eden. Okay, for example, people may not have heard of, but the concept of Hiram Abiff, okay, and it sounds familiar, goes back to 1 Kings chapters 5 through 7, where Solomon is building the temple, the first Jewish temple, okay, and the architect was a mysterious character known as Hiram Abiff, okay, and if you read enough high-level Freemasons, some of the names I just mentioned, they really focus on Hiram Abiff, and basically what they say is the symbolism of Hiram Abiff, you know, and a legend Hiram Abiff is killed, okay, and he rises again, okay, but symbolically, the Freemasons, you know, as a temple, okay, as the architect of the temple, okay, now Freemasons, again, have something called the Great Architect of the Universe.
Right.
Okay, that is their god. Okay, now remember, and then you can see this. You can see this reflected in the symbol. Like if you drive by, you see, you know, sometimes you see those signs on the side of the road with the, you know, with the compass, right? You know, the compass and the square. And just read, okay, you know, great. You know, just a big G in the middle of it. It's like, all right, great. You know, that's a Freemason hall,
right?
You know, up ahead, or Freemasons or whatever. But what that really means, okay, the compass and the square is symbolic of the great architect of the universe, which is this mysterious character known as Hiram Abiff, okay, and the G, the Freemason G that everybody can see on the side of the road on these signs or on these Masonic temples, really stands for geometry, or gnosis, or Gnosticism, okay, and what does that mean for, the Gnostics, okay, you know, and again, what was Gnosticism, but basically the man is God, okay? Man has this internal spark within him, and man can become God. Now, where do we read about that? Oh, yeah, Genesis 3. Eat this fruit,
right,
and your eyes shall be opened. So the Freemasons, you know, while the physical organization of Freemasonry, you know, really got its start with the Knights Templar, okay, back there, you know, say from the year 1000 to about, I think it was 1307 when the Catholic Pope, you know, the corrupt bunch of mafiosos of the Catholic Church, you know, got a little jealous when, the Capone gang in the Catholic Church got a little jealous when the Dillingers, you know, the Knights Templar, started to move in on their territory in terms of physical territory and wealth, and, you know, they went and burned them at the stake in 1307. But anyway, that's another story. But the physical structure of the Freemasons really got the modern day Freemasons got its establishment with the Knights Templar. It carried through to the Rosicrucians, the Enlightenment. You know, the Rosicrucians were the crew behind the Enlightenment, the Francis Bacons, the
right.
Isaac Newtons, the Robert Boyles, okay, the John Dees, okay, John Dee, the occultist, the alchemist, the guy into the Kabbalah. Remember, we talked about the Kabbalah, who was in the.
Exactly.
Belonged in the court of Queen Elizabeth I, okay? This was the concept of Freemasons, you know, it was behind the European Enlightenment, okay? And then you carry that forward, okay? And then you had the Illuminati, okay? You know, the Bavarian Illuminati, Adam Weishaupt, 1776, not the American Revolution. You know, again, this concept of the Illuminati, that was a forerunner to modern-day communism. Okay, these revolutionaries, okay, so you had the Rosicrucians, they spawned the Illuminati, which spawned, again, the occult conspiracy, but that's top level, but underneath, you had the physical structure of the Freemasons, the name Freemasons came from, you know, building, going back to the Knights Templar, they started building cathedrals all over Europe, you know, they went on their little crusades, supposedly to protect pilgrims going to the Holy Land, you know, when the Catholic Church retook Jerusalem for a couple of years, like 200 years back there in the Middle Ages. The Knights Templar were supposedly tasked with protecting pilgrims going from Europe to Jerusalem to visit the so-called Holy City and Solomon's temple, the Jewish temple, which was obviously destroyed in 70 AD by the Romans. But anyway, the name Freemason came from the concept, I mean, these guys were running around building all these cathedrals and they were literal concrete masons building, you know, like the cathedral, you know, Chartres and Notre Dame and these sorts of things. And they were free, you know, to bounce around Europe, and they were masons. building these temples. But, you know, again, so you have, you know, the name Freemasons, and that gave us, again, the modern-day name of Freemasons. And, of course, it became, it went back again to the symbolic language. Again, this concept of building the temple in their minds. Remember, I can try to make a jump here. Now, remember,
right,
John chapter 2, now think about this, okay. Now this is going to have a lot more meaning. Remember, Jesus chases the money changers out of the temple.
Exactly.
And whips. And God's so-called chosen people, remember at the beginning of the show, he spent the whole show just bashing this concept of physical Israel. Now, physical Israel, the representatives of modern-day physical Israel, the Pharisees come in and say, you know, what gives you the right to chase our buddies, the money changers, out of the temple? Okay, 46 years, you know, we've been spent building this temple. Okay, another offshoot, that number 46 has huge meaning. Okay, and it ties into Daniel 70 weeks. And, you know, again, we can put that off to another show. We don't have time for that right now. But anyway, they tell him, 46 years, we've been building this temple. You're going to, and Jesus says, well, knock it down, and then 3 days I'll rebuild it. Okay, and they're like, and basically they're like, you know, what the blank are you talking about? We spent 46 years building this thing. You're going to rebuild it in three days, excuse me. And Jesus says he's talking about the temple of his body. Okay, now that meaning in this context is huge. Okay, so I don't know if you're following all this, but basically what I'm saying is the
right
temple. That, remember the stone that the builders rejected? Okay, if you go back, you know, to the parables, Matthew, you know, 21, you know, again, he's lambasting the Pharisees and saying the stone that the builders rejected. And remember, now we're talking about temples and Freemasons. But what temple, you know, the stone that the temples rejected? Well, let's think about this for a second. You know, what stone is he talking about? Oh, yeah, there's an unfinished temple painted on the back of our so-called Federal Reserve notes with a stone missing, a capstone missing, with a certain illuminated, all-seeing eye of Genesis chapter 3. I hope people are making these connections here, but this is where Freemasonry, you know, on that level, again, on the upper level, attaches into this whole conspiracy. Okay, it really
exactly
comes down to the boil down. They're trying to build their temple on Earth. Their temple is, you know, 500 million people or themselves, the elites that are left after this impending world war. You know, the imbecile majority is, you know, they clear the decks of humanity and they rebuild the Earth. From their mindset, okay, they rebuild their temple. Okay, this is what's really being talked about versus, you know, what God's talking about. And Jesus is talking about himself as a temple. And, of course, this is a symbolic temple or the house of God, which is the body of Christ, which is the body of believers, which in a figurative sense, you know, people need, for this concept, people need to read Ephesians chapter 2 and you'll see what's being talked about here. So hopefully, I know. I mean, I don't know where we are here. Now we only got a couple
right
of minutes left.
Yeah.
We didn't even.
I mean, yeah.
But hopefully, what we did is we built the foundation.
Exactly.
For the occult conspiracy. I mean, you asked about Freemasonry, and I gave the basic background. But again, really, maybe next week we can pick up now with World War One. Because remember, now we're back to this. But I guess what I'm saying is this is where the rubber of the conspiracy,
yes,
the conspiracy of Freemasonry meets the road of current events, and it starts with the, you know, the mysterious Ivy League president of the early 1900s, which is the exact same mirror image of the mysterious Ivy League president of the 21st century, i.e. Woodrow Wilson, to Barack Obama, when gave us World War One. The current one's going to give us World War III. And it's all been planned. And I guess from this is a good way to springboard into next week's show, and we'll delve into the, and we touched on this a little bit, you know, the real history of World War One, the League of Nations, right into Hitler and World War Two, which again, you know, the United Nations Environmental Movement, and all this crap. population control, which is leading us right into World War III. The stuff all connects, and it's got nothing to do, again, with some, you know, Sunday comic antichrist and some stupid, rebuilt the temple in Jerusalem, which, I can't believe these guys are taken seriously anymore. But anyway, again, the site is boxofsunglasses.com, and I guess I'll shut up now.
No, and also at Rob Roselli to really tweet out different information and people ask questions and specific things. So, I mean, you have a lot of things you've painted the pictures of in the last 2 months, 3 months. One, again, is, again, we broke into specifically Revelation. Then the Georgia Guidestones. Now a little bit of the Freemasons and the co-conspirators. And there's a lot of different co-conspirators out there. The Freemasons. What about the Knights Templar? Is that something else as well to look back into that?
Well, again, the Knights Templar, they were a real mysterious bunch. Okay, but they I guess a way to sum them up in the last, I don't know, whatever, 30 seconds we have, is they're basically a bridge from the modern-day
right.
aspects of the cult conspiracy all the way back to the Garden of Eden, okay, and the concept of temples and what really is a temple of God and what is a temple of man and the symbolism of Freemasonry and that sort of thing. I mean, the Knights Templar are a good focal point to kind of explain a lot of those things and a bridge between, again, the modern-day conspiracy and that going all the way back to the Garden of Eden. And gave
yeah,
us, you know, modern-day
Freemasonry,
as we discussed. But anyway.
That's definitely an interesting part of it. And then, so definitely you would think the Masons are co-conspirators in this, in your opinion.
Well, again, I don't want to be misunderstood. Again, I mean, at low level, I mean, you're run-of-the-mill Freemasons, they, you know, they only get together, and, you know.
No, they're leaders, the high-powered Masons.
But, yeah. Oh, yeah, the symbolism, the high-level free, you know, Masons, okay, and you know, and what worship, you know, who worship the great architect of the universe, which is really Lucifer. Okay, when it gets right down to it, those guys are the real deal. I mean, those are the guys that we need to be watching and learning about and paying attention to. But these are the guys that, again, that look to ancient Egypt for inspiration and consider themselves the power behind the power. So in other words, in ancient Egypt, the pharaoh was supposedly the son of God. Again, the pharaoh was the offspring of the male and the female. Okay, the male being Baal or Osiris or Ra, the female being Gaia, you know, the Roman Diana, the Greek Artemis, the Egyptian Isis, like, i.e. the whore, okay? But you get those two together, and this goes back into mythology, okay, Kronos and Rhea, okay, Gaia and Uranus, okay, if you read Greek mythology, okay, those are the two that really are at the forefront or the foundation of Greek mythology, the same concept. You know, remember, Egypt and Greece are related. But anyway, that's where we really need to be paying attention. So in other words, the modern-day Freemasons consider themselves the equivalents of the high priests that were the power behind Pharaoh. Because you have Pharaoh, he was the face or the image of the power structure, the so-called son of God. But behind him, you had the money changers and the guys really controlling him. If that sounds familiar, it should. It's the same exact concept. It's the same carry forward to today. Remember, it chases through all these mythologies, Egypt, Greece, Rome, the Rosicrucians, the Illuminati, the Round Table groups, Council on Foreign Relations, Bilderberg, etc., what I'm calling the un-American genocidal complex, that kind of our overlords, I'll call them, our owners, okay? That's really where the action is, and that's really where all this back and forth, all this talking of the Bible, the Old Testament, and the New Testament is really what it's pointing to. And again, it's symbolized, it's summarized in this concept of Freemasons and Freemasonry, Hiram Abiff, okay? Remember, people want to do some research, you know, look up the concept of Hiram Abiff as it relates to Freemasonry, and you'll see it. And the Freemasons themselves are saying this stuff. This is where I'm getting this stuff from, by the way. I'm not just making this up. Manly Hall is my favorite, you know, Masonic historian. I mean, that guy tells us everything. But Hiram Abiff is really a cover story for the so-called legendary Osiris, okay, which really
exactly.
The symbol of that is the death of knowledge, okay, or this idea, remember in the Garden of Eden, do not eat from the tree of knowledge of good and evil, don't do that, okay, Adam and Eve rebelled, they listened to Lucifer, the Freemasons literally worship Lucifer, he is their god of light, they have knighted themselves as gods, they've given themselves the right to decide who lives and who dies, okay, what I'm really talking about is the summary of real world history here, and it's tied up in the symbolism of Freemasons. I guess it's the best way to tie this
definitely.
Up. But anyway.
All right, Rob, look forward to next week. Take care, man, and we'll talk soon, okay?
Hi, Neil. Thanks. God bless. Talk to you.
Bye. Oh, good bless. Take care. All right. That was Rob Roselli. Take care, guys. Tomorrow, a lot of interesting interviews.
Geico presents sharing versus oversharing. Today, Bridget Griffin shared a video of her daily yoga routine, two self-help articles, and her new blog called Build Your Inner Bridge with Bridge. Girl, your sharing has turned into oversharing. No worries, Bridge. Geico has some info worth sharing with your 7 blog followers, like how you could save money on your car insurance, update your policy, and report a claim just by visiting geico.com. How's that for building your inner bridge? Bridge. Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.